From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. Downtown is moving. Every week, every month, every year, it gets a little busier, a little more crowded. The woman in charge of making sure that people are able to move efficiently through downtown is Robin Hutchison, Salt Lake City's transportation director. Robin will join me today to talk about transportation in and around the downtown area, how are we planning for the future, and what is Salt Lake City doing today to make it easier to get in and around our urban center. All of that after this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance, joined today by my dear friend, Robin Hutchison. Robin, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me back.
Robin is the nationally lauded transportation director for Salt Lake City. Robin has done a lot of really great things in the city, and we're going to talk about some of those today, some of the more high-profile things. But Robin, a lot of what you do, and I hate to say this because it's going to sound mean, a lot of what you do is kind of boring.
Well, I don't think it's boring. I think it's all very exciting, Jason. I would say some of it is invisible.
Yeah.
And not boring to the traffic engineers and transportation planners. But you're right. There's so much that we do in downtown and the rest of the city that just help us function. And those are things like timing traffic signals. As controversial as they may be, they are all online and we track them and monitor them, and when we see problems we get out there and fix it.
So timing them so that it helps traffic flow better.
It does help traffic flow better. It's a more difficult project for us. We have to spend quite a bit of time because of our wide streets.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a pedestrian quite a long time.
It does.
To cross
indeed.
The street. Yep.
It does indeed.
Yes,
yeah.
If you're a pedestrian, you're always happy to have that extra time to cross the street, which means that we can't have our signals on short cycles.
All right.
So the longer the signal cycle, the harder it is to keep them in synchronization. So we have some challenges, but we monitor it every day. Every day there's a report on which signals are talking to each other. There's usually a few percent that are offline that we have to make sure we get back online. And then we do about 50 changes to our signal timing plans every year.
Wow.
So that's based on feedback, based on issues that we find in the field. And again, that's pretty invisible work.
As long as you're driving along and hitting green lights, you might think, oh, I'm so lucky today.
Yeah,
thank
we don't,
God.
That's
thank
not
the universe.
The feedback that we usually get about traffic signals.
We usually get a little bit
the opposite. But I understand that when people are at red lights, they're wondering why, and maybe that explanation of our wide streets helps a little bit.
Yeah. I think mostly when people hit green lights, they think it's because they're a good person. And when they hit red lights, then they look for someone to blame. I think that's what happens. That's what happens with me.
I think if they're hitting green lights, it means they're going the speed limit, which is my advice to drivers.
That's always good advice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Because they're timed for the speed limit. They're not timed for speeders.
No.
So that's something somewhat invisible. We do a lot of work that supports development.
Mm-hmm.
We do about 5,000, over 5,000 development review plans from a transportation perspective, and that's so that we help local or larger or any sort of business or residents get the permits that they need. So we're every day, we review a certain number of proposals from transportation's perspective. We issue traffic control permits. We do meter bagging all over the city, and especially in downtown, whenever there's a special event or anyone really who needs to use that curbside for a specific purpose, we'll give you a permit. And you pay a small fee for the day, and you can use that space that should be paid parking, but you're instead covering the city's cost for the day, and we allow you to just be there to serve whatever need that you have for the day. So we do a number of those, so many of those a year, and it just helps to support liveliness in downtown and in the city. But often, you know, it just magically happens, and you're not really sure who out there is doing it, and that, a lot of that is us.
Yeah. I have had such a good experience with Rocky in your office.
Yes.
Did I say it wrong? Is it Rocky?
Well,
or is
you
it just
said
Rock?
Rocky once, and I was like, who? Because I'd never heard Rocky, but we call him Rock.
Okay.
He's our most senior traffic technician, and he's one of four traffic technicians that we have that their whole job is field work and also issuing traffic control permits. So they're our eyes and ears on the street. Mm-hmm. They collect our data. They look at conditions. They respond to over 300 requests a year from residents and businesses for something that they want looked at. They're speeding on my street. I don't like where this no parking sign is placed. Can we get a different zone on our street? These are, the job of the tech is to be the eyes and ears on the street. So that's a big function, big part of what we do, collect data, analyze the data.
So Rock was a good experience for me. So the Downtown Alliance is sort of this nexus between the business community and the city. Mm-hmm. And the business community loves you. They are so – and that doesn't happen with every transportation director. It doesn't happen with every city department. But, Vasilius Priskos, who's a big downtown property owner, Wasatch Commercial. And I think they like you not because you always tell them yes – but because you are very clear with them about how things work and why they work that way and what is possible and what is not possible. And you're just kind of a straight shooter. And I think the business community appreciates that.
I thank you for that positive feedback. It doesn't happen very often, so I really appreciate that. Thank you for sharing that with me and listeners as well. I believe in being very direct. Transportation is always about trade-offs. There's never a perfect project where we didn't have to make some sort of trade-off.
Right.
And if you're honest about that, the person on the other end may not like the outcome or the thing that they're hearing, but they will understand why they're hearing it. I also am willing to talk about things, sometimes potentially even a little too long beyond when they should be talked about. But I'm willing to consider alternative ideas and say yes as often as possible.
Yeah. You have, I think that, and that's not true for every sort of municipality. It's not true for everyone who works for a city or county or state government, but you really... you're like the opposite of sort of a culture of no. You're always a culture of yes. Mm-hmm. Like, how can we make this work? How can we find a solution? What do you really need? What is your goal here? And how can we find a way to solve that?
I'm not unique to the city.
No, I know that. I'm not saying that.
And I think Salt Lake City is a culture of trying to say yes. And Salt Lake City, from top down,
increasingly
has a culture of trying to say yes as often as possible. Our job is to serve you, whoever you are, whatever your request is. Sometimes there are circumstances. You know, I want to control the stoplights. I've had that before. Well, we have to say no. You know, there are some obvious things. We have to say no.
You can't let everyone just control the stoplights.
I want a personal stop sign, or there's sometimes unreasonable things that we can't do, but we try to say yes. And I think that's true of my colleagues as well in economic development and in housing and when the mayor's office is responding. It's a culture.
Yeah, I think that is right. I think that's been our experience. I did want to talk to you. There's been a little bit in the news, transportation in the news. Mm-hmm. With the very exciting new intersection,
yes.
Which I've used it as a pedestrian, I've used it as a biker, and I have used it as a motorist.
Fantastic. It's designed for drivers, walkers, and bicyclists a lot, and it's designed to help organize the space very clearly for all of the users of the intersection. It's actually part of a larger project. If you remember last year, I think I was here last year talking about our 300 South street improvement, where we did poured the median islands in concrete and put in public art and installed the bike lane and made some pedestrian improvements. Well, we did a project similar but not the same along 200 West, and that's so that we could make a T of really high quality streetscapes for walking and for bicycling. So on 200 West, we have some of the same elements of 300 South. We do have that protected bike lane, but we were able, with so much space on that roadway, to make diagonal parking, to improve the pedestrian conditions even more so by putting in some islands and pouring new concrete ramps, improving it for ADA accessibility, which is a big part of that project.
Yeah.
Over 30 new ramps were poured. Again, back to invisible. It's the kind of thing that you wouldn't see unless you're in a wheelchair, and then you're going to love our 30 new ramps.
You're really going to notice it.
And we also had to find a way to engineer the intersection of two protected bike lanes.
Right.
And I sent my staff away numerous times. They came to me with this idea. It's originally from Holland.
There's a lot of biking and pedestrian activity
They're
in Holland.
They're the front runners.
Yeah.
They really are, in the world, probably the best at design. And I sent my staff away numerous times saying, I don't have enough information. I'm not making this decision yet. And they worked so hard. Colin Quinhurst on my staff was a project manager, and he worked very hard with our engineers, Kurt Larson, Kevin Young, Scott Varlaus, and they came together, did a full technical alternatives analysis. And the thing that was most reasonable, the best approach was doing this thing called the protected intersection. Adapted by some folks at Alta Planning and Design, a great consultant here in town, and we went to work on it. And through the design process, we just kept reinforcing, this is really what's best for this intersection. It's great for drivers. Mm-hmm. It's great for bicyclists. It's great for walkers. It opened officially last Saturday.
Yeah.
We've been watching it function pretty well all through the construction period. Even before we had all the markings in the right places, people were intuitively using it in the right way. And so far, so good. We're really pleased with the outcome.
It's very cool. So if anyone wants to take a look at this, if you're not downtown regularly, you haven't seen it yet, this is the intersection of 200 West and 300 South mm-hmm. streets. Mm-hmm. Two protected bike lanes with some pedestrian enhancements. It's very different. It's an unusual looking intersection for our downtown.
Yeah, there's some real unique features to it, but as the user of it, it will appear to be pretty straightforward once you're at the intersection. And the feedback we've gotten so far is it's working
people
pretty
like
well
yeah.
for everybody. You know what's really great? That whole 200 West project was, sure, it's about transportation, but it's as much about creating a destination and a place. 200 West has so many restaurants and so many places to visit, especially between 200 South and 400 South, where we made the majority of the improvements. And how we could use all of that right-of-way that we have, that we own. How can we leverage our city resources, the right-of-way, to support the businesses on that street? And essentially what we're able to do is deliver more people to that street by, one, making it a great place to visit, something interesting. Two, making it safer and more comfortable for walking and for bicycling, thereby attracting more people to it. And three, not changing the capacity of that roadway is the same today as it was a year ago. We have more than enough space to handle the demand for car travel as well. So we're able to move more people through the corridor. We're moving them slower, admittedly, but that's great for business. Mm-hmm. They can see what they're passing. They can either stop and visit or come back again. So really it's about leveraging what we have and transportation projects that support the overall goal. And in this case, it's making a great place on 200 West.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more boring things. Boring stuff like our wide streets and mm-hmm. the challenges and opportunities that provides. How do we create more vibrancy downtown? What is the role of transportation in managing all these things? We will be back after these messages with Robin Hutchison, Transportation Director for Salt Lake City. We are back. You are listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. As every week, we are exploring the people, places, and events helping to shape Utah's urban center. My guest today is my dear friend, Robin Hutchison. Robin is the Transportation Director for Salt Lake City. Robin, you've been on our show. This is, I think, your third or fourth time. Talking about transportation. We were talking about the new intersection on 300 South and 200 West, and you recently did a radio interview for National Public Radio, I believe. So this is kind of the first in the country to have this kind of a functioning intersection. I know there have been some trials in, was it Austin or?
There's one other that's been built,
okay.
And that's in Davis, California. Austin and Boston are getting ready to open theirs very soon.
Okay, so kind of a trendsetter in building this kind of a intersection. One of the things that you talked about that makes our city unique, and you talked about this with the traffic lights as well, these wide streets. I mean, that is a good feature for our community, but there are challenges associated with that as well. I would guess it kind of gives you some canvas to work with to do some things that are a little bit more interesting and creative. In some ways, you don't have the challenges that Boston or Philadelphia or colonial cities have of windy, narrow little alleyways. You got a big canvas to paint with here.
There are great things about having that big canvas, and there are some challenges as well. One of the reasons we need to do so much in the way of pedestrian safety and bicyclist safety and visibility for drivers is because with wide streets comes typically increased speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also more exposure, especially for pedestrians who are crossing the street. It's a much longer time to be exposed to moving traffic.
Right.
More so than almost anywhere in the United States. We really struggle with that. Citywide, we had over 130 crashes that involved bicyclists or walkers, it's too high.
Yeah.
It's way too high. And so those wide streets sometimes present an even bigger challenge safety-wise. But flipping that over the other side of that is they're also a huge opportunity to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So if we have typically higher rates of crashes, we have so much capacity on our wide streets that we can make changes and still keep everybody moving.
Right.
We have extra space on so many of our roadways. Now, not every roadway. Around the city, we've done a couple of conversions of lanes, and they are carefully chosen. For example, 1300 South, west of State Street, we simply couldn't make it happen. Our volumes, we have about 25,000 cars a day. We don't have a lot of room to change the layout of the travel lanes for cars. We just don't.
Right.
Gridlock is bad for everybody. But east of it, our volumes dropped to about 10,000 cars per day. And we had really too many lanes. We don't need all those lanes to very efficiently move the traffic that has a demand for that corridor. So we're able to transform some of the lanes, get the speeds down a little. That makes it safer for walkers and bicyclists. It complements the neighborhood better. And with remaining space, often we're able to add bike lanes. So there's a whole transformation of street that occurs. And we're talking about 200 West. It's the same thing. Very wide street, higher speed, more exposure for walking and bicycling. And here's this broad canvas with about 7,000 cars a day, which is very low.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
And a lot of space to work with where we can keep cars moving. We can add protection for bicycling, we can add more amenities for walking, and we can improve conditions for everybody. So a challenge, but also a really big opportunity for us.
Well, one thing I want to underscore, the biking is important to the city. This is a city where there are a lot of bikers, in part because of the inversion. I mean, one of the best ways that people can combat air quality issues or air problems is by getting out of their car. And so a lot of times when people are biking, there's a number of reasons they want to do it. They want to save money, they want to be healthy, but also it's really good for air quality. And I don't know that people always recognize the nexus between air quality and biking, but there really is one. People are concerned about air quality, and they might not recognize when I see people on bikes or in mass transit, that is an answer to try to help the air quality issue.
On the global scale, I think people get it. People understand. I think when you get to the project level, there's a little bit more nervousness about the projects that go in. There's really three reasons why we would do any project. One is by demand.
Yeah.
So people have asked us for years to make it safer or more comfortable to walk and to bike, and they've asked us for more transportation choices. They want different ways to get around the city. And that's in every master plan. It's in every piece of outreach we've ever done. It's a blanket statement that people make. Two, by demand, by the numbers. Our numbers show that people are changing the way that they get around town.
And younger people, too, especially.
Younger people, yeah. Especially. And also, there's another category nationally. There's research that shows that that millennial population, which you might anticipate, but also that the population of active boomers are not choosing cars as their first choice of transportation. They might be their second or third, but their first choice is shifting to something else. So there's increasing demand for choices in how to travel. It doesn't mean anti-car, no car. It means sometimes you might want to drive, and sometimes you might want to ride your bike, and sometimes you want to take transit. And if we want people to do those things, we need to provide the facilities and resources to make that happen.
Yeah.
And then really in the environmental imperative, air quality, of why we are making these facilities more comfortable, more safe, and more appealing, whether that's public transportation or mass transit, whether that's biking, whether that's walking. These are really important if we're going to make a dent in about the 50% of air quality issues that are caused by driving,
by
cars. It's not to say that we're asking people to change their lives entirely, but we are responding to demand, and we're offering a choice, an alternative to turning on that car, especially when we have bad air. We're coming into that season now. It's turning colder, and I'm starting to think about how can we reach more people, and what do people need? We can't expect people to make any change on any day if we haven't provided the facilities and we don't make it convenient and comfortable.
So our family, I think, tries to do this. So I sold my car about 19 years ago while my wife and I were still dating, and we just shared a car, and we have been a one-car family for almost 20 years. And I drive our car sometimes on the weekends. you know, to go to Costco or to pick up dry cleaning. Mm-hmm. If we go skiing, mm-hmm. we drive our car skiing. But otherwise, I take tracks and I walk to the track station by my house and I take tracks to my office, and there's a really close track station by my office, and I see you on it all the time.
Sometimes
also.
I am on it, yes. But only sometimes. I do other things too.
You do other things too. So the car's available, but I love not having a car. I figure over the past 20 years, not having a car payment and paying for gas mm-hmm. and insurance and fixing the car and, you know, getting the safety inspection and taxes and all those things, I probably save tens of thousands of dollars.
I think AAA says it's $14,000 a year.
A year that you save.
Yeah.
So 20 years, $14,000 a year.
That's a lot.
I could have paid for my house. What was I thinking? I still don't have my house paid for. I must be spending it in other ways.
There's another little piece to this story, too. And that is that for drivers, a worst-case scenario for drivers is that as our population grows, everyone chooses to drive.
Right. That's the worst that could happen.
It's the worst scenario for drivers.
Yeah.
So drivers should support other people doing other things.
Yeah.
The bike lanes that make people more comfortable in the roadways, the new bulb outs in the neighborhoods that make it shorter, make the crossing time shorter, better bus service so that people can more conveniently take transit. The growth of trips is exponential. It's not one-to-one. One person moves to Salt Lake City, but there's approximately 8 to 10 trips per day
right.
associated with that one person. Our ability to maintain a good driving network relies on our ability to capture some of those trips, the growth of trips, on other modes.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, again, one of the benefits of having you in your role as, you know, a very highly regarded nationally transportation expert. That's true. That is true. Stop it. Stop it. That is very true. And we know that. And really planning for our future. And I think that that's really what you're doing, and you're doing a great job of it. So, Robin, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy our talks.
Yeah. On or off the radio.
On or off. Yes.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. You can join us every Thursday at 10 a.m. where we explore the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center.